Mini episode 457 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 457. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris. We have for you today actually a version of our show within the show, the FantasyDraftHelp.com Insider, because we have two gentlemen coming on with us to discuss the 2014 fantasy football season. Bringing on first a gentleman who is making his initial appearance on our program. We're very happy to have him, Chris Mascaro from the Thursday Night Tailgate.com show. Of course, you can check it out there. You can check out all the past episodes. Additionally, the show is available on the Armed Forces Radio Network, which in particular is very exciting to me as they have proffered an invitation to me to appear on the show in the near future. And I don't believe I've ever been on the Armed Forces Radio Network previously, but that is a great show that they have. It is very, very high quality football talk at all times, much along the lines of what I know we're going to have here today. So we bring on the program first. It is our honor to have on Chris Mascaro. Chris, how are you today, sir? Good to have you on the show with us.
Nah, thank you for asking me to be on it. I'm honored to be here.
It's, I think, going to be a very excellent fantasy football conversation today. We are going to be joined shortly by Mike Harmon of Fox Sports and a number of different entities from there, foxsports.com, Fox Sports Radio, SwollenDome.com. You can find him at Swollen Dome on Twitter. And for Fox Sports Radio, specifically, 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern time, Monday through Friday, with Jason Smith on that program. You can also catch him, of course, on the weekends. He is omnipresent as the Fox Sports in-house fantasy football and fantasy sports in general analyst and expert that they have, and one of the very, very best in the medium out there. He will be joining us shortly here. So, Chris, I will start with you and just get some thoughts. I just wanted to get some rough thoughts from you guys as we look forward to this season. Different thoughts on strategy and ways of approaching things. One of the very interesting developments to me in looking around the league this year is some of the offenses that are really going to be pinning their hopes on, for lack of a better term, what we might still call scat backs. Gio Bernard looks like he's going to be in for a greater role in Cincinnati. Bruce Arians has sworn up and down that the same will be true with Andre Ellington this year. Those of us that were burned by his hesitancy to fully expose him last year might believe it when we see it, but what are your thoughts on these players? Because they're very high-risk, high-reward. And you look at a guy like C.J. Spiller last year, the promise that he has, and it was unfulfilled last year. That's what allowed me in one of my leagues to scoop him up in the fourth round this year. So these are guys that can help carry you to a title. These are guys that can also really kind of burn you if you rely on them too much. Do you have any general kind of sense of the landscape this year and how some of these guys might fare in their respective team environments?
Well, I think, you know, you make a really good point in that, you know, the scat back is something that's going to be utilized more and more, right? The NFL is a passing league now, right? You're looking at, you know, teams, you know, I'm a Steeler fan, you know, running more no huddle offenses, you know, really trying to take advantage of all the rules changes that have come into play. You know, who knows what's going to happen now with the new, you know, really focus on defensive backs and, you know, illegal, you know, touching and all that sort of stuff downfield. And if that gets called, like we've seen so far in the preseason, these guys are going to become more and more valuable. You know, C.J. Spiller is a guy that, you know, I was one of the guys who got burned with him last year. And I always like to handcuff him with Freddie Jackson because I think Freddie's fantastic. But Spiller is a guy that can catch the ball out of the backfield. He's going to get a bunch of carries. I think he's a wise pick for someone to look at. You know, right now, one of the other things that, you know, is really intriguing me is, you know, the role that Sproles is going to play with the Eagles. I think he's a guy that you might want to pick later on in the draft to have, because not only if Shady gets hurt, but Sproles is so valuable in so many places, so many areas, you know, from his receiving, you know, punt and kick returns, that sort of thing. I think he's a great back that you're going to want to have as well. But to kind of get back to, you know, to your original point, I think these guys are worth a mid to late round pick because I think you're going to find that there's more and more passing in the league, and these guys are going to add, rack up, you know, the catches, and they're going
to
rack up.
That's a great point, and particularly with the predominance that there seems to be on the landscape these days of PPR leagues, you're seeing backs that are emerging in that way and able to do an awful lot. As a matter of fact, when you mentioned Darren Sproles, I'm in two long-standing sister leagues that have identical rules, and they do not allow for flex players, but I ended up nicknaming Darren Sproles one-man flex league last year because almost all the production I got out of him was sort of wide receiver-esque. I got very
right.
little traditional running back production from him, so it was very interesting. And in terms of your overall point about the offenses really kind of dictating the enhanced role of the scat back these days, doesn't the success of somebody like Shady McCoy with his speed in Philadelphia
yes.
probably exemplify that better than anyone?
No, there's no question. To me, Shady McCoy is the number one player on the board. Say all you want about Adrian Peterson and his value as a running back and his, you know, nearly 1,300 yards last year. But let's not forget, not only did Shady McCoy get you 1,600 yards rushing, but he threw in another over 500 yards receiving. So, yeah, he's the number one player in the league. He's got to be the first player off the board in every league, and his value is just immense.
He really is a poster child, again, for the success of a lot of these backs in PPR leagues and with the ability to thrive and really in three-down situations as well with their explosiveness. I see we now have on the phone lines again, as mentioned previously, our honor to bring back to the program a gentleman we've really enjoyed talking fantasy sports with the couple times he's been on with us previously. You can find him on Twitter at the Swollen Dome. You can find his work at SwollenDome.com, FoxSports.com, Fox Sports Radio, and as we mentioned, 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Monday through Friday nights Eastern Time with Jason Smith. I can only be speaking, of course, of the great Mike Harmon. Our pleasure to welcome him back to the show. Mike, how are you today, my friend?
Great's a dubious term to attach to me, but I'll appreciate it. What's going on, fellas?
Well, you will be, as I know, as always, dominating the ear holes of America and beyond on this program here. It's our pleasure to bring you into our conversation. Chris Mascaro and I from ThursdayNightTailgate.com, we were just discussing here at the outset scat backs this year and the kind of high-risk, high-reward role that they have. Somebody like Gio Bernard in Cincinnati, they're going to lean on him more, obviously. Are they going to lean on him enough to make him the top flight guy? Bruce Arians swears that he's not going to be a wootsie like last year and he's going to turn Andre Ellington loose. So what are your thoughts on some of the guys in there? C.J. Spiller, kind of a cautionary tale coming off of last year. These are the guys that can help carry you to a title, but these are also guys that, if you overdrafted them, may hurt you as well, it seems like.
Well, it's the rule of the running back, as we saw last year, where anybody that stayed true to the old mantra of get my running backs locked and loaded, odds are you stepped on a giant mine instead of, you know, you had McCoy, you had Peterson had big years, you had a couple of outliers, but pretty much everybody else that was predicted to be a top-tier back. You got to mention Matt Forte, otherwise my hometown people in Chicago get mad at me. But beyond that, you know, you're looking at Arian Foster, you know, what's he got left in the tank? You had C.J. Spiller, who you mentioned, and I just remember him sprinting for daylight on that Thursday night game, the only highlight of his season, it would appear. So people, I think, a little bit skittish. This year you're seeing more of the wide receivers coming in just saying, look, I'll take my chances with whoever ends up, if a quarterback goes down, I'll take the backup. Because outside of the first six or seven running backs, you're really wishing and hoping for health and for these guys to hold tight and be able to take on the big workloads. As much as we like Giovanni Bernard and Andre Ellington, and they're exciting to watch, do you trust that they're going to be 20 down guys? And are they going to be carrying the ball at the goal line? That's the bigger question for both of those guys.
Well, Mike, I want to follow up on something you said, because the player I'm going to ask you about is not a scat back, but it still put me in mind when you were talking there about the sort of sight unseen characteristics here of projecting what some of these guys are going to do in bigger roles this year. To me, there's no bigger question mark in that regard than somebody that I still had as a first-round pick out there, and I think a lot of people do as well, Monty Ball, just based on looking at what Knowshon Moreno did in Denver last year. It's pretty easy to project that, again, he's going to have a monstrous year, but it still strikes me as a little unusual. I got him in the second round in a 12-team draft in one of my two leagues and was relatively happy with that. But it is kind of a strange situation, is it not, to take a guy And again, you look at what Marino did last year, and we're sort of extrapolating, but at this point in time, we have no way of knowing whether or not he's going to be worthy of such a high selection.
Yeah, I think one of the big things with Moneyball comes into the idea of pass protection, and that's why Marino was on the field to start the season last year, is that they trusted him doing the two-step and at least giving a little bit of a chip to keep Manning from taking a hit. And that's been one of the big things. I had a chance to talk to Ball when I visited Dove Valley during my training camp tour, and that was one of his big points of emphasis this offseason, of just, you know, every day getting in front of the mirror and just doing his thing, trying to make sure he had his steps together. So you look at that, and it's important to note that with Welker out and Decker gone, there's a lot of opportunities in the red zone that suddenly have availed themselves to Monty Ball and to Julius Thomas, a little more to Denarius Thomas, but I don't know that Denarius Thomas sees many more targets than he already has. So you're seeing the ball spread around a little bit, Sanders or Latimer or maybe a little bit more as you go spreading out from there. So Monty Ball, the expectation is that he's just going to come in and run amok, but I'm fearful that if there are still deficiencies in pass protection, that you're going to see him shuffled a little bit. The return of Clady healthy, you know, makes you breathe a sigh of relief a little bit. And with that offense and the way they're calling penalties anymore, much to the chagrin of anybody that just likes to see people play football, that Monty Ball is going to have plenty of opportunities around in the red zone to make up for it. Ergo, he's end up in that top 5 to 7 backs.
Absolutely, and there's something more that I want to ask about the top boy offenses out there like Denver philosophically. First, I want to follow up with Chris for a second here. Get your thoughts, Chris, on Monty Ball. It's kind of a rare situation where you've got a guy being drafted where he is, being valued like this, simply because of the role that he's going to be in. And, of course, again, the expectation that he has the ability to carry it off as a high draft pick, as a very successful college player. But again, to take and extrapolate the success of No. Sean Marino last year and use that as a potential baseline, as unbelievable as that might be for somebody like Ball, what are your thoughts on him versus some of the other top-flight running backs once you start to get outside the top three or four of them?
I think he's worth it. I think he's worth it. You know, a second-round pick like you got him. I think Mike makes an excellent point. You know, when you look at Monty Ball, there's a couple of things that are going to play into his value, and one of them is, you know, the amount of red zone touches he's going to get. You know, clearly, you know, Denver's going to score a bunch of points. They always do. They're going to get down near the goal line, and are they going to, you know, hand the ball off to somebody else, or is it going to be Monty Ball's, you know, goal line? And I think it is going to be his goal line. So I love the fact that, you know, he's going to get a lot of opportunities to score touchdowns. So to me, that's, you know, you got value there, right? And, you know, I think, you know, the red flag, and I agree 100% with what Mike said, the red flag for me is he going to be someone that Peyton trusts and can protect Peyton, you know, when you're, you know, in between the 20s, if you will. And I think that's going to dictate how many touches he gets. But that piece aside, I think he's a guy that, you know, if you can get him in the second round, I think, you know, he's a guy you want to jump on.
Absolutely, because of the upside. I certainly agree with that. And again, it's always interesting to see how these non-fantasy considerations come into play. Nobody out there in any leagues, to my knowledge, gives any points for pass blocking. But again, the ability to protect your quarterback has a lot to say about your ability to stay on the field and gain that kind of trust from the coaching staff, no question about it. As I alluded to a second ago here, I want to get into a question with you guys philosophically, because I think this is going to be an interesting consideration for people managing their lineups during the year, on the notion of a top-flight offense like Denver and what they have to offer, not just from, again, Demaryius Thomas, the lead target, but the trickle down to number two, number three, number four, offenses like New Orleans in a similar vein. There's not too many of them in the league that you would mention up there, versus being a number one guy elsewhere. And what really kind of crystallized this for me, I had probably one of the luckier moments that anybody would have had in a draft last Friday night. I got Keenan Allen with the third pick in the fourth round in a 12-team draft, made possible by the fact that one of my cohorts, a very smart gentleman, by the way, did take Emmanuel Sanders right before me. And I was really kind of scratching my head, like, really? Yeah, I think he's going to have an excellent year there, but not the lead guy, not the secondary guy, even with Wes Welker out of there. And he's still, you would think, behind Julius Thomas on the pecking order. So I'll start with you, Mike. What are your thoughts on that in terms of somebody who is a cog in a very, very powerful wheel versus somebody who is a lead target in what is still a very good offense?
Well, it all depends on how much a gambler you are in terms of the way the distribution goes. As we talked about, you know, in getting Monty Ball situated in that offense, you know, the touches go through. And with Decker and Welker out, you're looking at 40%+ of the of the red zone targets now up for grabs. And you look at Decker, a double-digit guy last year. The question of Sanders, if the foot stays healthy, is he a guy that immediately comes in and takes that role? So I think people are betting on number 18 standing upright rather than Phillip Rivers. And there's just that breakdown. It's something that we see across the draft board as a whole, right? How can you rank Forte, Jeffrey, and Brandon Marshall so highly, but then kick Jay Cutler down to the mid-teens at quarterback? Likewise, Tony Romo. Here's all his weapons up highly, but because we don't like Tony Romo and his past dating habits, he gets pushed down your draft board. So we see a lot of that, and it becomes the bet on the quarterback more than anything. And with Keenan Allen, I think there's a fear that the offense beyond him, even though we might be excited about Ladarius Green, I don't know how much you guys have seen of him, and fear of Antonio Gates retreating to the background, that perhaps there isn't that second wide receiver to help alongside with Phillip Rivers' offense. And, you know, you would argue very quickly that there wasn't a guy last year that they trusted. Vincent Brown was a bust. He actually got released this year. Malcolm Floyd can't stay healthy. So the concerns that were there last year for Rivers and for Allen are certainly there again. And I think you look at a guy like that, I'll take the number one as opposed to hoping that my fourth option comes through. But I certainly understand the reticence of people to look at this offense and say, wow, they're devoid of other wide receiving talent. Who's going to take coverage away from Keenan Allen? Well, he made plays last year. Emmanuel Sanders, even in the best circumstances, he's got four games to be a top flight guy. As soon as Welker's back in the mix, concussion issues aside for the moment, that, you know, he goes back in the pecking order and that target number drops.
That's a very good point there, Mike. And before I turn to Chris on this and ask him the same thing, I want to follow up on something you said, and specifically as it regards Jay Cutler. Let's look at your Bears for a second here, because I'll tell you, on our FantasyDraftHelp.com board, we had Jay Cutler 10th, and just outside the sphere of the number one quarterbacks, we had those going down to number nine. I will tell you, in our case, it was simply a health consideration. When you look at last year, the time that he missed, the time that he's missed in recent years, I would have not had much hesitation at all putting him maybe number four, number five, whatever. Somebody could have signed an affidavit and given it to me saying he's going to be healthy this year because, again, as you said, Marshall in there and Jeffrey, Forte with what he's able to do, take the heat off there. Is Cutler one of the guys that you see being somebody that has the potential to really, really, really outkick his coverage, so to speak, if he stays healthy?
Well, sure. I mean, you look at what they were able to accomplish last year between he and Josh McCown. I believe they were the fourth highest. If you put the tandem together, they would have finished third or fourth in terms of standard leagues. And so I would ask in your league, if Cutler got downgraded to there on health concerns, why don't the wide receivers? You're telling me Jimmy Clausen's coming in and dominating? I mean, is it strictly the Mark Trestman system? Like, at least Josh McCown, you could say, hey, this guy's taking a few snaps. He's a heady guy, and perhaps if he stays upright, he can fling the ball downfield. You know, talent wins out, I guess, on occasion. But, you know, now you've got Jimmy Clausen. That would force me to reevaluate how highly I want to take stock in those Bears wide receivers if we're going to do that. Likewise, every guy's one hit away from being done. So if we go into the season with that, with the exception of guys coming off of back surgeries and such where you have no choice but to kind of look at that, Jay Cutler's a guy that I think it becomes more the people don't like the persona of Jay Cutler more than the on-field Jay Cutler.
Well, all I can say to that is touche, although one outlier comes to mind, but I think it is just that, an outlier. With my downtrodden Cleveland Browns last year, the fact that everybody not named Brian Hoyer did their best to degrade the value of Josh Gordon and didn't succeed in downgrading his value, as he had arguably the best wide receiver season in the league last year. But, yeah, to expect Marshall and Jeffrey not to fall off if anything happens to Cutler, your point is well taken. They're going to suffer. I think most people would expect that, no question.
Well, but even Josh Gordon last year, just if I can just finish that.
Sure.
I mean, even last year, he only finished as a top 12 receiver seven times.
Yes. It was
so,
again,
as great as the season was as a whole, a lot of those stats were 2 to 3 games that really puffed things out. Not that they weren't fantastic performances, but in terms of a consistency level, you know, I put a little asterisk on it when you get to that.
That is true. No, that's a very, very good point because, again, just the fact that, and I was kind of shocked when it came up last year that nobody, I think, in the history of the league had done the back-to-back 200-yard games. It seems impossible if that's the case in this era of wide-open offenses, and yet it hadn't been done previously. So that's very well taken. It was kind of cloistered to a handful of games as opposed to being throughout all 14 of them. Again, 14 as opposed to 16 because it was with the handicap of missing the first two on his original drug suspension here before this unfortunate one this year. Or maybe not so unfortunate for Steeler fans, Chris. I'm sure Steelers will be glad not to have to line up against him on Sunday. Yeah.
Exactly right. Yeah. I got no problem with that suspension.
I can understand that completely from your point of view. But when you look at, again, somebody like Josh Gordon, you know, comparable in a sense to somebody like Keenan Allen last year, who, again, really didn't have a lot of help at any of the other positions. Or, yeah, I guess you could argue that Josh Gordon had Jordan Cameron to an extent. But a number one guy who doesn't really have as much competition for the ball versus an Emmanuel Sanders. Your thoughts on how to do that, as Mike said, possibly whether or not you roll the dice on the higher upside of the guy in the more explosive offense. There's some definite considerations to be made as you're weighing these types of matters.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think Mike's exactly right. I mean, to roll the dice on a number four guy, you know, again, getting back to the Broncos example, when Peyton's got so many options, he's going to spread the ball around. And to hope that you're going to get a great game out of an Emmanuel Sanders, you know, multiple times throughout the year, to me, too big of a risk. You got to go with the guy that's going to be the number one target and the guy that's going to be looked at the most often, right? You're trying to maximize your points. You're trying to do the right thing for your team. You can't look at a guy like Emmanuel Sanders early in the draft and hope that he's going to be a guy that's going to give you double-digit points week in and week out. Just too risky. Not worth it.
I would agree with that in terms of how you look at the pros and cons of these matters. And, again, lineup management so crucial during the season. Obviously, as we always say at FDH, that if you bungled your draft or your auction, you are kind of screwed now, regardless of what a lot of people will tell you. There's not a whole lot you can do, but we'd like to think certainly that very few people are in that kind of hole right now. And, you know, optimistically, nobody really knows for sure until week one gets going and we start to see a new year. Mike, I have to say, and this is something I've mentioned previously when you've been on the show, I always appreciate, among other things, with your fantasy advice that it doesn't come in a one-size-fits-all bundle, that you are quick to qualify advice based on different situations and definitely like that. So I have a question for you in that regard. Again, all things being equal, but for those folks that are in flex leagues this year, it strikes me that, again, if you have a relatively balanced roster, you're probably going to be more likely maybe to go wide receiver some weeks in that extra spot than running back, unless you specifically loaded your roster one way or another for that. Do you get the sense that the pool at wide receiver as far as acceptable starters may just be a tad deeper than running back this year?
Tad deeper, but given the number of committee situations at running back, I mean, there are going to be guys that certainly are still going to be warranting that look at the flex, right? You may not be overly excited, you know, to have Joint Bell as one of the guys. But he's going to be a guy that's going to touch the ball 10 or more times a game. You look at once Ray Rice is back from his 2-game suspension. But Art Pierce isn't going to go away unless suddenly Ray Rice is running gangbusters. You're looking at at least a couple of weeks where you've got a workload split. The New York Jets, are they going to be able to pass the ball downfield? No, but they'll be able to run it behind that offensive line with Johnson and Ivory. And Ivory's a guy that I think will have enough of a touch count. I mean, once you start getting into the PPR world, well, then, you know, differences come in, and you'll see more wide receivers start creeping in, you know, and players like Darren Sproles and some of those secondary guys where there might only be 5 to 7 touches, but if you're going to get the point per reception, so be it. I just think the wide receiver position is really deep. I mean, the fact that a guy like Doug Baldwin is being drafted as a fifth wide receiver in most leagues, when he's the first wide receiver in Seattle, I think about tells you how deep, one, the pool is, two, the expectations that numbers are going to come through the passing game going forward. And I think it comes back to that general mistrust of how teams are going to handle their running back situations. Again, you have your magnificent seven, at least in my eyes, and beyond that, it really becomes a how much do I trust this guy. So if I have to start gambling on backfield workloads, I'd rather go find the wide receiver that I know is getting some targets each week.
Absolutely. Very good nuanced answer, as I expected. And I tell you, to your point specifically, as I'm looking at my two draft result deals from last week, Doug Baldwin was actually undrafted in one of the two 16-round leagues that I was in. So, yeah, there's a lot of people that are kind of looking past him to a little bit. Chris, turn it to you. What are your thoughts on this as far as trusting running backs versus trusting wide receivers in those spots this year? Because, again, I think Mike has a very good point, and specifically as it relates to the bye weeks when it really becomes a situation, a running back where beggars can't be choosers. But all things being equal, it does seem like unless your roster is really geared more towards running backs that you may end up using a wide receiver more often than not, perhaps.
Yeah, no, and that's the right decision to make. I mean, look, the NFL is a passing league now, right? Running backs, you know, the value of a running back, whether we've seen it in the real-life draft or in fantasy drafts, after the first few, it's really not worth going down the running back world. You got to go wide receiver. You got so many good wide receivers. I mean, look, you know, 24 guys had over 1,000 yards receiving last year. You throw in another, you know, 10 that got you 900, you know, plus receiving yards. And now with, you know, with the idea that whether they call illegal contact as much as they have in the preseason into the regular season or not, you know, it's encouraging more scoring. More passing, more scoring. That's what the NFL wants. How are you going to get those points? 9 times out of 10, it's going to be from a wide receiver. To Mike's earlier point about, you know, running back by committee, as much as I love, you know, Le'Veon Bell as a Steeler fan, you know, I know LeGarrette Blount is there. So do I know that Bell is going to get all of the touches down in the red zone? Probably not. You know, they're going to give it to Blount a lot of times down on the goal line. So, you know, you mentioned C.J. Spiller earlier. Again, Fred Jackson is there. Freddie's had a heck of a career. So he's going to get a bunch of those goal line, you know, touches as well because he's a bigger back than Spiller. So I feel like you got to go wide receiver. There's more value there. I think they're going to, you know, it's only going to be more and more passing in this league over the next few years as we evolve, not only from a penalty perspective, but player safety perspective and that sort of thing. I think it's just going that direction. I'm going wide receiver in a flex spot.
Yes, I would agree absolutely. And to your point on C.J. Spiller in the league where I got him, I was very relieved a couple rounds later to be able to get Fred Jackson. And, yeah, that seems like one of the paramount situations out there to really kind of hedge yourself when you look at Spiller's performance from 2 years ago versus Jackson's performance from last year. Hopefully you're guaranteed to get at least one of the two to the extent that there are any guarantees in life or fantasy football. But in a broader sense here, just to bring it full circle, I'll start with you, Mike. General thoughts on this season, pieces of advice for people, anything that we really didn't cover yet?
I think one of the largest thing, I mean, draft season being over, I hope you waited on your quarterbacks unless you absolutely needed the warm, snuggly veteran guy at the top of the board. Because, look, the drop-off there in your 12 that need to start in standard leagues is not nearly as precipitous as the running back position or even the wideouts. I mean, we talk about depth at wideout, but you're still starting to get into the second, third receivers on teams pretty quickly. So stocked, but people this year, I think, are going to be more active on the waiver wire. I think we're going to see more activity because you're seeing more of these three receiver sets, guys like John Brown. What's his role going to be in Arizona? Is he suddenly a guy that rises up and the running back by committees? Well, who's the third guy that suddenly cracks a rotation because of an injury? And I just think that based on, and we'll see it for the first time tomorrow, the possibility that we're going to see more of these penalties, you know, points are going to be flying, and you're going to see a lot more wide receivers stashed and in holding cells on people's rosters, wishing and hoping that they elevate their game because of the way things are being called.
Great point. Many situations out there as far as the running back rotations and the wide receivers in spots 2, 3, and 4 kind of remain a little bit opaque right now, and we have to see how they shake out. Any final thoughts from you, Chris? Any pieces of advice that you would have that we didn't get to yet?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, to piggyback a little bit off of what Mike just said, I think Santonio Holmes is an interesting guy going into Chicago as a third or a slot receiver. Plus, you know, if one of their guys ends up getting nicked up, what value can he bring to the Bears? One of the guys that I'm very intrigued, you know, this season from a running back perspective to see value that, you know, maybe people aren't looking at as much as Rashard Jennings with the Giants. I think he could do something, you know, very special over there. And Toby Gerhart with Jacksonville, don't underestimate the Jags offense. I think they're going to be better than what people think they're going to be.
Very great counterintuitive piece of advice. There's a lot of people, I think, that are sleeping on that. And, again, they shouldn't for the very reasons that you outlined there. As I knew it would be, gentlemen, a real powerhouse fantasy football roundtable to get people ready for the 2014 season. I greatly appreciate it. Mike Harmon from Fox Sports, Chris Mascaro from Thursday Night Tailgate. A pleasure to have both of you gentlemen on the show. Thank you so much. Appreciate it, gentlemen, and thank you all, everyone, today for tuning in to FDH Lounge mini-episode number 457.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.